Hi everyone. Welcome back to the Pathfinder 101 podcast.
Today's guest is Mr. William Seawright, pastor at the Presbyterian Church of Winter. Thank you for your time, and let's jump right into the questions.
Thank you.
Could you briefly explain your role as a pastor?
Sure. Let me couch it first by saying that I'm a Presbyterian pastor, which means in a particular tradition and denomination, and that defines a handful of my responsibilities in my role as pastor. So it will be different for a lot of people who are interested in being a pastor, just depending on their tradition. That out of the way, the first responsibility that most people think of when they think of a pastor is found in worship leadership. So week to week, I am the coordinator of the Sunday morning worship service. In conjunction with the music minister that we have on staff, I arrange and lead the worship of God by the congregation. Every week, my congregation, the music minister, and I work together to identify which hymns would be best for that week. I then select or write prayers myself. The congregational responses, which we call the liturgy of the service, put it all together. I have a coordinator of communications who then prepares the bulletin. And I do all the behind the scenes things as well in order to just make sure worship happens, recruiting the volunteers, other prayers that might be important, and making sure that all announcements are listed so that we have a, we know what's going on in the congregation. Then, of course, I prepare and preach a sermon, usually of about 10 to 15 minutes long, ends up being about 1,200 to 1,500 words. And that is what most people think of. It is actually just a fraction of what I do as a pastor. I also spend a lot of time as the head of staff, making sure that they are working as a team to do the work of the congregation during the week. That includes the operation of a daycare preschool in my job. And then I also visit members of the church, check in on them, see how they're doing, help them in certain problems, help them if they have questions of faith, and visit them in the hospital if that's what is necessary. And finally, I coordinate the board, which we call a session in our tradition, which is the governing elders that decide what the church is going to do.
And what made you to consider a career in the church over the different options, and particularly why did you choose to become a pastor?
In our tradition, we speak of all occupations and all careers as a vocation, as a calling. Becoming a pastor in our tradition begins just as any other occupation. You begin to understand yourself as someone with gifts that are specially suited to that career. For me, it was spiritual guidance and congregational leadership. As early as high school, I was active in my home congregation in a suburb of Dallas called Richardson. Mission trips, Bible studies, that kind of thing. I was volunteering to teach the young children there. And then at Austin College, I became involved in the campus organization where we led retreat weekends for middle and high school students, youth groups. And I also began to work in the chapel quite often. And at that point, as far as I could tell, I was just locked in. I wasn't going anywhere else.
And at Austin College, you pursued a Bachelor's of Arts in Religion and Philosophy. Do you still find what you learned there particularly relevant to the work you do today, and what other majors might be relevant to what you do?
Yes, certainly. I find it quite relevant. I've always been interested in different topics and ideas, a wide spectrum of things. I always return, though, to the philosophical and ethical, and because of my faith, theological underpinnings of any subject, any idea, any piece of art, any trend in society. Therefore, it wasn't so much the major that I chose. It was actually the small liberal arts curriculum that really got me going the way I was. I went to Austin College because they had a tendency to paint connections between the sciences and philosophy, literature, art, music, everything. And it made sense to me. I would not have been able to put that into words in high school, but I sensed it at the time. The major I chose was not key to this career path because, honestly, people from any kind of major can come and be a pastor. You are welcome. But what it did is it helped me develop a sense of identity operating within this career path. From the pulpit, I now look out at the congregation, and there are many and varied careers that they all do, and many interests and political persuasions, all that. And I see an intellectual link that connects them together philosophically. And therefore, I can help them see together the spiritual links that God has kind of made between them, why they are called a community of faith rather than just a bunch of people getting together on a Sunday morning.
And immediately after your bachelor's degree, you went to Columbia Theological Seminary in Georgia to pursue a Master's of Divinity degree in theology. So for someone considering your profession, is this really necessary? And what are some of the other options, like master's or specialization options, that are available to go down your path?
So in my tradition, a Master's of Divinity degree is required. That's the base requirement. There have been exceptions, but it is on a very individual basis, as needed, I guess, as necessary. So I had no choice about that. That was what I was going to do. I have heard of people getting certain degrees that are similar and then adding in a few classes that will pretty much make it a Master of Divinity degree. But all things being equal, the denominational bodies that oversee what we do getting to become pastors say, have a Master of Divinity degree, put that diploma up on your wall and move on.
In many other professions, like maybe the medical profession or some engineering professions, there are licensing or continuing education requirements. Are there any sorts of equivalents in your job?
Year to year, there's not continuing education requirement. It is expected that you will be doing continuing education, that you will find that on your own. It is worked into most salary packages that you have a certain amount of time and money to go and do some continuing education, but it is not suggested what you should do. And so you have to understand what you need at that moment. Congregational leadership, nonprofit leadership, supervising staff. I've done several of these kinds of things in my continuing education. I've also served as a chaplain on call at hospitals as part of my continuing education. It was required beyond just my Master of Divinity degree to do what's called clinical pastoral education, which was in the hospital, going and seeing patients and then coming back and talking with other people in the same program about what you encountered, what it brought up within you, and how maybe you could have handled the situation better. We did a little bit of that, but then I extended it by at night going anytime there was somebody who was admitted to the emergency department for some kind of severe trauma, I would show up and be there for that situation in case the family needed me, the nurses needed me, anything like that. That was a big part of continuing education for me.
And within the church, there are different roles, such as, like you mentioned, chaplain, pastor, and reverend. And I understand that like some of these are just simply differences across denominations, but what are some just within the Presbyterian denomination, and what are some key differences to note between them?
There are not a lot of options when you're feeling like you're being called to church work at first. You can always end up in a career in church without going the route that a music minister would be a good example of something that you might have an interest in music, piano. Perhaps you are gifted enough to have learned the keyboard for the organ, and so therefore you want to do that on a weekly basis. Especially in our denomination, there's not a lot of shades of career in the church except things that you could just end up doing because you felt you found a job there and said, oh, this does sound interesting. Coordinator of communications would be a good example of, you know how to use Word, you know how to use Excel, you know how to put things on a website. So therefore, you might end up doing that at a church rather than at another small nonprofit.
Earlier, you just covered in broad strokes like what it means to be a pastor. Could you just talk about like a typical work day or work week, maybe number of hours, some of your like daily routines, and maybe just touch on work-life balance?
Sure. My week is pretty simple overall because my congregation is fairly small. Let's say the week begins on a Sunday, so it is worship leadership. And immediately on Monday, I am already beginning to think about what's going to happen the next week in worship. I meet with the music minister quite often nowadays over Zoom, and we discuss interesting things that we could pull out from the worship service on Sunday and what we are thinking about scripturally. We follow a pattern of scriptures called the lectionary. And so we are somewhat suggest, it is said, you know, maybe you should preach on these. And so we look at those and say, are these texts speaking to us for next Sunday's worship? Is there something the congregation is dealing with that another text might be more suited for? So a meeting on Monday or Tuesday, generally, depends on how busy the two of us are that we have to get together. Other churches I know have a little bit more rigorous schedule, but since it's such a small congregation and a small staff, I tend to keep a flexible work environment. On Tuesday and Wednesday, it is preparation of worship in other ways, trying to get the bulletin together, trying to find any volunteers I can. And anytime I find myself with a free moment, getting in the car and trying to go see somebody. I have two daughters at the moment who are elementary school age, which means I don't have a lot of free moments. And so it takes me a moment to find those free hours in which I can go somewhere. I have a small commute to get to my church. So sometimes Tuesdays and Wednesdays are just me sitting at my computer trying to finish everything that I can before my daughters get home. All that said, I do have to get to see people. So I find time to do that. Thursdays generally are my sermon writing day. I spend most of the day trying to construct that sermon, although there are plenty of interruptions because the life of a pastor generally has some interruptions to it. Something happens, I need to know about it, I need to be there, then people are welcome to interrupt me. Fridays and Saturdays are my weekend because Sunday is going to be pretty busy. One week of the month definitely has a meeting with the board. Sometimes there are other meetings or subcommittees from the board. And so I'll attend those meetings if necessary. With the pandemic, of course, now we do more things by Zoom. So it is easier for me to attend those meetings than it was before pandemic. And let's think, you asked about work-life balance. Being a pastor somewhat can incorporate all your life because parts of your life are meant to be shared with the congregation that you serve. And so Thursday tended to be a lot of meetings. Then Thursday night and Friday are my sermon writing times, and I have to be a little bit flexible about that. Other pastors may have different situations on that. It's just what being a pastor at a small church looks like is you move things around as you can and move on.
One other question I had about the pastor role was, how does someone that's interested in entering the church end up eventually just going down your path? Like, what are the different steps they need to take outside of just their obtaining their degrees that like ensure that they get like placed in a church or anything like that?
My denomination in particular has an academic and a spiritual process by which you enter. So you ask besides the degree, and so that's the academic one. The spiritual one begins with your home congregation. For instance, when I was in college, I went to the session of my home church in Richardson, and I told them that I felt a calling, and they had to confirm it. They had to say, oh, we have seen these sorts of gifts in you. And then they referred me up to a higher authority, a higher body, which is the presbytery. Dallas-Fort Worth and surrounding areas are all one large organization, all the Presbyterian churches together, specifically the PCUSA Presbyterian churches, the Presbyterian Church of the USA, they all have some connection to each other through the presbytery. And the presbytery has committees of church leaders. Some of them are pastors, some of them are what we call elders, who are generally the ones chosen to serve on the church boards and then the church committees. They get together and they work together and review the work of the smaller congregations. So when my congregation said, oh, well, Bill has some gifts and it feels a calling to ministry, then a certain committee at Presbytery said, all right, let us examine him and guide him through the seminary process and ask him about his faith, make sure he is doing the right things, taking the right classes at seminary. And basically, they had me fill out a bunch of paperwork too, in order to write essays, in order to discern whether, yes, indeed, I was actually honest about this, that I was feeling a call. It wasn't just because it seemed like a fun thing to do.
What is your favorite aspect of your job, and what is your least favorite aspect of your job? And just before you answer that question, you mentioned, like, do some people actually enter the church just because they feel that it might be a fun thing to do? Is that something that happens often, where the essays part, like, really does distinguish, or is that more of just like a formality?
It's less of a and by the time you get to presbytery, it's less of a fun thing to do. It often is, you haven't quite considered the implications of what you'll be doing by being in people's lives. And one of the things they had me do, the presbytery had me do, was go to see a spiritual mental health counselor who gave me an inventory. I can't remember the name of the inventory, but he gave me a very large series of questions to understand whether I was in a good enough place to be sharing the lives of the elements of people's lives. Make sure that I wasn't trying to fill a need in myself for mental health care by giving mental health care to other people and spiritual health care to other people. So there are people who go through that part of the process specifically and say, oh, maybe I should work on myself before I say that God is calling me to do this with other people. There are also people who tend to say, oh, well, the process is nothing. All I'm really there to do is to break some bread and pour some juice for communion, and that's all I need to do. And that's not an adequate understanding of what they're being called to do. You know, the church leadership aspect of it can be quite complicated and difficult. If they're not sufficiently prepared for that reality, then the committee will help them see that. I've kind of hinted around at the best and the worst parts of the job. Best part, I think, is sharing with people their lives. You know, I am there for baptisms of children. I am there for weddings and couples getting together. Sadly, there for funerals. But funerals can be a very beautiful moment for families to come together and find reconciliation. I have been there for a lot of those kinds of events. And already, couples that I have married have had kids. And so I'm watching the kids enter into the church education portion of what we do, morning Bible studies and everything like that, and watching them grow up. And it's a different way of growing up. Growing in faith is different than just going to school and learning to read, but it's there, it's part of it. So that is just a wonderful element to it. I have been with people as they've retired, and then I have watched their health fail. I've been with them in the hospital. All that is a beautiful, wonderful, and challenging part of this ministry. It is my favorite part, all of that. Difficult part, I would say, is for me especially, it is just the elements of church. It is for many people a free time activity, right? They spend most of their week at work, and then they try and give some of their free time to a faith organization such as the church. And it can be taxing for them to then say, realize that this is also somewhat of a nonprofit business. We're trying to do things in the community, and we need some of the same elements of buy-in, and we need some of the same elements of community involvement that nonprofits do. So you don't always get people at their best when it's time to lead a project. You don't always get people at their best when it is time to help somebody else who is leading a project. So you're recruiting volunteers who can often be already beyond their means. And that's a very difficult part of the job for me. That said, it's all part of faith formation, and it's all part of spiritual lives. And so I see the goodness of it, but it is a struggle.
Without going into specifics, how does compensation look in this profession?
Compensation, I would say, I haven't done an adequate survey, but I would say it is on par with most nonprofit work, most basic nonprofit work, small nonprofits. It is generally lower overall, but because especially the Presbyterian Church, and I know a few of the other denominations have been doing this for years, they have figured out how to put together salary packages that help you care for yourself and your family and will care for you in retirement fairly well. You're not entering the church for making millions of dollars generally. I have heard of pastors at very large churches who do quite well. That is the exception, I'll say that. Most are just doing it because it is a calling and very deep spiritual sense that they don't feel like they could do much else.
In your profession, the relationship building and interpersonal skills are some of the most crucial skills. Would you agree with that statement? So what are some people are just naturally born with those skills, but most do have to actually build those maybe from the ground up or maybe from halfway. What are some habits or methods that you've developed over time or advice you would give to sort of become better at that? Because as a pastor, like one of your main tasks is being like a master at all of those skills.
The one thing I would say is intentional practice is perhaps the best way I have found to try and develop those skills. I am one that does not have those skills very naturally. And I note to myself, oh, it is time to turn on those skills and see if I can get them to be better than they were. So setting an intentional practice of doing so, of interacting with people and not pulling back. And that's kind of the way I have done it. I would say that there are many gifts that are necessary for church leadership. And if you can find an avenue within being a pastor, for instance, an assistant pastor, an associate pastor is what we call that, that helps you to spend some time developing those without having to be perfect at them yet, that is a good way to go. I have not done that. I have instead been at smaller churches where I am constantly trying to develop those gifts. But I know of several of my colleagues who have spent time as an associate pastor in order to help them develop those gifts so that if they become a pastor head of staff at a mid-sized large or a large church, which in the Presbyterian Church, we talk about churches above 650 to 700 members as being large, then they will have those gifts in order to use them as best they can.
In terms of career growth and progression, I believe you hinted at this a little bit with the associate pastor, but that's more like in terms of developing those gifts or those skills. How does someone transition maybe from a smaller church to a larger church? Or is that something that comes on its own? Or is that something that like some people might look for? Like, is that a goal of some people? Is that how people should look at it? Or is it something that just naturally becomes more experience?
That is an excellent question. And I will tell you, I don't have an excellent answer to offer you. It is process of finding the church where you're going to be in the Presbyterian church, where you're going to serve, is quite a complicated process. I compare it quite often to online dating service. You put information out there and a congregation puts information out there in this online form that we run, and you end up exchanging that information one way or another and contacting each other. And then you have conversations and interviews. Each time you engage in that process, it can look very different. And each committee that is generally searching for, each congregation has a committee that will search for the pastor. Each committee could be looking for certain elements that you have. So you could be at a small church and have developed certain gifts that a committee at a mid-size or large-sized church is looking for, the gifts they are looking for. And that is how a lot of it happens. I know that a lot of denominations do it in a very different method. Let's pick on the Methodists, who generally have somebody helping people go from one church to another. It's a bishop, and I'm not sure if they have a committee that helps with that as well, but they are almost told, you're done at this church, you're going over to this church. And it happens at a certain time in the year. For Presbyterians, it can happen at any time, and the gifts that you have could be applicable at a larger church, or the larger church could say, we need only people who have been at large churches before, and that is a perfectly acceptable way of doing it. It is a very confusing process, as I say.
The last couple of questions all tie in together. So what is your best advice for someone maybe at the end of their high school career, at the start of their college career, that's been very interested in the church, very involved, and they're looking down this path and they're thinking about it and they're not sure yet whether they want to be like absolutely committed? What are some steps they could take maybe to resolve those doubts that they have, or to find out whether that's the right thing for them?
My advice is try anything that interests you. And the reason I say that is because at seminary, I had colleagues who had been doctors. I had colleagues who had been lawyers. I had colleagues who had been teachers, musicians, a few other things. And they were bringing different gifts than I could bring, because I only went to college and studied religion and a little bit of philosophy. And while I understood the academic study of some of the topics that we covered in seminary, they brought a little bit more of their experience to more practical aspects of the job, pastoral care aspects of the job, which is going and visiting people. The teachers had a special understanding of how the Christian education understandings were the pedagogy of Christian education, all that. They could bring that to the classroom and discuss it. They have taken that then on to their churches. It is very healthy. It is a wonderful thing that people can come from many different backgrounds and become a pastor. So if you have an interest in it and you're not yet ready, feel free to explore any way you want to when it comes to academics, when it comes to career path, and just keep listening. See if you are feeling called to be a pastor, or feel if you are being called to just work with a church on a regular basis. You can be a church leader within a congregation as a lay volunteer. And if that means that you are called to be doing more, if you keep on feeling like there is something here. I was at seminary with someone who turned 60 while we were there at seminary. You have time. Explore your doubts. It's a good place to be.
That's a great piece of advice. And sort of the last question I have is just an extension off of that. Do you have any final thoughts or comments to share before we close this podcast?
No, I don't think I really do. I think you covered quite a bit. So thank you very much.
Great. Thank you for all your great advice and all this valuable knowledge and for your time.
Great work.
A great interview. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much. Have a great, great time and a good school year.
Thanks to everyone who's listening for choosing to spend your valuable time with this podcast. I really appreciate it. Please be sure to check out pathfinder101.com for more information like this. Thank you, and have a great rest of your day.